Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill.
Seven minutes after the hour of 5 is where Hyatt Madison Square Garden and these nice, warm, and toasty facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you on the 50,000-powerful watts of sound by NJDiet.com. And it's Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire. Now, why Jerry Lee Lewis? Well, first off, he was related to Jimmy Swaggart. You remember the Udis Kratz, the Irreverend. At his huge Walmart-style church in Baton Rouge, I Have Sinned. But more importantly, Jerry Lee Lewis was a stereotypical character, although a great performer, who represented the South, south of the Mason-Dixon line. And he decided to marry his first cousin, who was 13 years old at the time, and caused him a lot of grief. But then again, nearby Elvis in Mississippi was... He was snacking on 14-year-old girls at the height of his rock and roll career. And that leads us to the case that's being made against Judge Roy Moore. Many of you have defended him. I don't know if that's going to necessarily stand after today, because an older woman named Beverly Young Nelson gave a press conference in New York City side by side with her attorney, Gloria Allred, and said that when she was 15... the judge started driving her around.
In between the dumpster and the back of the restaurant, where there were no lights. The area was dark and it was deserted. I was alarmed and I immediately asked him what he was doing. Instead of answering my questions, Mr. Moore reached over and began groping me and putting his hands on my breast. I tried to open my car door to leave, but he reached over and he locked it so I could not get out. I tried fighting him off while yelling at him to stop. But instead of stopping, he began squeezing my neck, attempting to force my head onto his crotch.
Oh, that's it. That's the punchline right there. But she went even further about his intimidating ways that the judge told her nobody would believe her.
At some point, he gave up. And he then looked at me and he told me, he said, "You're just a child." And he said, "I am the district attorney of Etowah County. And if you tell anyone about this, no one will ever believe you."
Gee, I wonder what Mark Levin's going to say at 6 o'clock about this, and his combative chief, Sean Hannity, who have gone to the mats for Judge Moore. And many have said, well, you know, these critics are coming out. They're probably DNC members or hardcore Democrat apparatchiks. Beverly Young Nelson said she and her husband are actually Trumpers and Trumpettes.
"My husband and I supported Donald Trump for president. This has nothing whatsoever to do with the Republicans or the Democrats."
And we go once again south of the Mason-Dixon line to the state of Alabama that produced, yeah, that's right, our producer and our phone screener, Justin B. Love. And we're hooking up with Matt Murphy, who was so kind to come on with us towards the end of last week. He's the co-host of the Matt and Arnie Show in Birmingham, Alabama. Thanks for jumping on board again, Matt.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Curtis. I need, is it just Monday? I need a stiff drink after all of this today.
Oh, boy. With this fifth woman accusing Senate candidate Roy Moore of sexual misconduct, is this it for the judge?
Well, it's certainly the beginning of the end. Let me tell you, there's a couple of things here. You know, last week I told you that immediately Alabamians were suspicious of the source. We know that the Washington Post doesn't really carry Alabama values around in its hip pocket. And we were suspicious of the timing. But I also felt like that if there were more women to come out, that it could spell the beginning of the end. And that beginning happened today, because I'm hearing that more women are ready to talk in Gadsden, Alabama. I'm hearing that this isn't the end in terms of the women that are going to set up this pattern, regardless of legality or illegality. And obviously this was an illegal act, if true. Obviously, the 14-year-old that we talked about last week was an illegal act of true, but there is a clear pattern of behavior that these women are setting up, if we believe them. I mean, there are some people in Alabama, Curtis, that still think that all of this is just a setup, that all of these women are lying, that all of these women have been bought off or paid off or somehow have been convinced to lie against the judge. But we have a pattern of behavior that you have a 30-something-year-old man that is hitting on and in some cases alleged to have assaulted 16-year-old women, and I promise you, nowhere in Alabama do reasonable people think that's okay.
Now, Matt, it's been stated by some who knew the judge that he was known to hang around parks and malls and try to pick up teenage girls. Why do you think this has taken so long to surface, especially since he's been such a contentious figure that others wanted to deep six?
He's been controversial, no doubt. I've not heard about this. And I've been in Alabama since 2000. I've covered the judge since he ascended to Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court just after that. I covered his downfall in 2003. Never once was it suggested to me that this was the case. All I can tell you is that Gadsden is a small town. He was very, very well thought of in the late 70s, early 1980s, into the 90s. He was a local boy made good, a West Point graduate. He was a Vietnam veteran. He eventually became Chief Justice. So the fact of the matter is these women could have been afraid to come forward before now, and he's just risen to the point in American politics. And you know, there's always, I mean, you well know, Curtis, there's always a breaking strain where you get to the point where your secrets cannot be hidden in closets any longer. And if we are to believe these women, those secrets are coming out for Judge Moore.
Now, I understand there are reports that the White House wants to put Jeff Sessions back in his Alabama seat to deal with Roy Moore. How would that take place?
I'm not certain, and I've heard some of that too, Curtis. I've heard the suggestion that somehow that Jeff Sessions could step down as AG. I think it's too late for him to just take the seat back over. The one name when you talk about write-in candidacies, it's too late to replace Roy Moore's name on the ballot. He's going to be on the ballot. Now, he could step down, and the suggestion is the governor could call a special election or could rescind the special election and then reschedule it for later on in the year. But I would tell you that Jeff Sessions is the only name that I've heard that I think could win a write-in candidacy if she doesn't reschedule it.
Now, what do you think that Judge Moore is going to do with the tsunami of allegations that are coming at him now almost day by day?
It's the $64,000 question, Curtis. What does Roy Moore do? I could easily see him digging in and not going anywhere and just telling the world that all of these women are liars and that none of this is true, and he's going to see this out to the bitter end. I could also see a scenario, especially if a couple of other women come forward, that he sees the writing on the wall and he withdraws his candidacy. It doesn't mean his name leaves the ballot, but at very least the Republicans have an opportunity to do something about Roy Moore.
Now, Mitch McConnell, as majority leader of the Republicans in the Senate, has said even if he were to win, they would refuse to sit him, so they could actually reject him being the senator from the state of Alabama. That's got to play some role in the minds of voters who are right now, let's face it, some of them up for grabs.
Well, and I've heard McConnell say that, and we're no fans of Mitch McConnell or the Republican establishment in Alabama, but we also don't like some of these accusations. At the same time, if the people of Alabama, and I don't necessarily think this would happen, but if the people of Alabama voted this man as their duly elected U.S. Senator, I would think that that would merit. I'm no scholar, but isn't there a legal challenge there? We elect this guy, and then Mitch McConnell just says, no thanks, we're not going to seat him. I think that's a horrible precedent. Although I do not believe, Curtis, we're going to get there. I don't think with this latest accusation, I don't think the people are going to vote for Roy Moore. I think this turns the tide against Roy Moore becoming the next senator.
If, in fact, the president were to pick up his phone as he returns from the Philippines after this long Asian trip and talk directly to Judge Roy Moore, asking him to drop out, would that have any impact on him?
Well, I mean, you know who President Donald Trump supported in the Republican primary and in the primary runoff, right? So I don't think, despite the president coming around to the idea of Roy Moore, I don't think there's really any love there. I think Roy Moore remembers that. And Roy Moore is a maverick along the lines of Donald Trump, and it would be just like him to dig his heels in if the president were to privately or publicly demand that he step aside. I could see Roy Moore easily digging his heels in and trying to ride this out.
And then finally, Matt Murphy, is there any one supporter that he has now who's a tried and true supporter? If they were to jump ship, then all is lost.
Well, I don't know that all is necessarily lost. Now, trust me, there are supporters. My listeners every day call me, and there are significant supporters that believe that all of this is a huge conspiracy. But I don't know of one single person that could convince Roy Moore that all is lost and he just needs to button it up and go on home. I think Roy Moore is his own man enough that he's willing to ride a lot of this out. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong for the sake of the reputation of the state of Alabama.
Do appreciate it. Matt Murphy giving us the update. As a fifth woman accuses the Senate candidate Roy Moore of sexual misconduct. Be very interesting to see what Mark Levin, who has been a staunch supporter of the judge, has to say. Because, man, this ain't looking good. And this guy's really looking like a perv who hung out at malls and playgrounds and schools looking to pick up teenage girls and underage girls.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Remember in the aftermath of the attack of 9/11 down at the Pit, the EPA chiefess who had formerly been governor of the state of New Jersey, Christine Todd Whitless, assured everyone, both first responders, those who were there to remove debris, do construction, those who lived in the area, went to school in the area, traffic through the area, that all was copacetic. You could inhale, exhale, no problems whatsoever.
As I say, you know asbestos was in there, is in those buildings, lead is in those buildings. There are the VOCs. However, the concentrations are such that they don't pose a health hazard. We're going to make sure everybody's safe.
And then the shocking headlines of Friday's New York Post, in fact, indicating that at least 12 former students at schools around Ground Zero have developed cancer in their 20s and 30s, and they're now seeking help from the city. One of those people is Michelle Lent Hirsch. She's the authoress of the up-and-coming book, Invisible, How Young Women with Serious Health Issues Navigate Work, Relationships, and the Pressure to Seem Just Fine. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Michelle.
Thanks so much for having me.
So when you hear the former EPA chiefess, Christine Whitman, say those famous words again, that no worries, the air was safe to breathe, what do you think now with all the data that's come in since?
You know, it's really upsetting. I think that many people are, you know, skeptical of government announcements. But when I was a student on 9/11, I was only 16. And so I think one of the most upsetting things about hearing that clip again is to think about how many of us were minors who didn't really have our own agency. You know, we were just trying to listen to the grown-ups who were supposed to be keeping us safe. And it turns out they did not do that.
Now, I understand at the time of the attack that you were a senior in Stuyvesant High School?
That's true, yeah. I was a senior.
Okay, did you feel any ill effects soon after or in the first few years after the attack?
You know, in the first few days and then years after the attack, the main thing that I felt and a lot of my friends from high school felt was just a very serious PTSD that went pretty much unaddressed by, you know, any adults who were around us, even though it was pretty clear. But I was feeling okay sort of physically for the most part for a number of years.
And then when were you diagnosed with your cancer and what form was it?
So in 2010, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And I started to sort of think, you know, I wonder if it's not a coincidence that my school was actually declared toxic and I'm being diagnosed with this.
Were you ever, did you ever know if in your family tree or in your genetics you had a predisposition to thyroid cancer or any cancers based on your family history?
No, my family, luckily, really does not have cancer in the family tree. So that's especially why I was suspicious, because it really does not run in my family.
Now, how many other students do you know were going to school, both at Stuyvesant and maybe at some of the other schools in the nearby area, who have since been diagnosed with cancer like you after 9/11?
You know, I don't know the exact numbers. I know that the moment I found out I had cancer, I told a very close friend from high school, and she found out quickly through word of mouth that even that year, by 2010, there were already at least two other students in my grade who had very serious cancers. And again, that's just word of mouth, just hearing about a few. I know that there are more, and that was only in 2010, so there have certainly been more cases since then.
Now, Michelle Lent Hirsch, is your thyroid cancer in remission, or are you still receiving treatments?
It is luckily in remission, but when you have cancer once, it can always come back, kind of changes your life, and I have to get monitored every 6 months or every year, and I also no longer have a thyroid, which is sort of an organ that we don't think about that much, but that you can't live without, and so for the rest of my life now, because of the surgery that took out my thyroid, I have to take medicine every single day just to, you know, stay alive, so it definitely has long-term effects on my life.
Now, you had the 9/11 Commission, you had the Zadroga Fund, you have had others who have tried to help and remedy situations that resulted in people who lived in the area, worked in the area, or serviced the area in getting cancer care. Is there anything that you and maybe some of your colleagues want from our city or our federal government that isn't in the offing right now?
You know, I wish we could go back in time and have people be more straightforward with us about the dangers in that building and in the area. But, you know, for now, I'm glad that there is a health program for people like me. And unfortunately, I did not find out about it until just a few years ago. I thought that the health program was only for first responders, and only again through word of mouth did I learn that actually students and people who worked in the area are also eligible. So I'm just hoping to, you know, raise some awareness, because I think a lot of people may have 9/11 related health issues and not know that, you know, we wish it didn't happen this way, but since it did, there actually are some federal programs to help out.
Do appreciate that. That's Michelle Lent Hirsch. She, along with 12 others who were going to school at the time of the attack of 9/11, have now developed cancers in their 20s and 30s, and they're seeking help. And you know there are others in which that cancer is going to manifest itself. Could I hear that Christine Todd Witless cut again? Because that is a double disgrazia, double shanda.
As I say, you know asbestos was in there, is in those buildings, lead is in those buildings. There are the VOCs. However, the concentrations are such that they don't pose a health hazard. We're going to make sure everybody's safe.
What a pretentious patrician that Christine Todd Witless is and was. A lousy governor in New Jersey, a lousy EPA chiefess for Bush 43. And I don't know how she lives with herself knowing. She basically gave the green light to people to go into the area around the pit and breathe that toxic air that has resulted in so many coming down with all forms of cancer.
Garth Brooks.
This week, Imus in the Morning has your ticket to the sold-out December 2nd Garth Brooks concert at Prudential Center.
How about that?
It's the Tri-State's toughest ticket, and Imus has it again. Standing outside the bar. Listen for a taste of a Garth Brooks song between 7 and 9 a.m. during Imus. When you hear the snippet, be the 20th caller to 212-268-9222 for a pair of tickets to the hottest concert of the year.
Getting all juiced up.
Grab your ticket to Garth on Imus in the Morning, 77 WABC. Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip a card like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give up, cause that's your birthday.
5:41 on this, the drive home at 5. And tonight I've got to do double duty. I've got to sit with the board of directors of the Guardian Angels and plot out our future as busy as we are. And then immediately head over to the birthday party at the Kimberly Hotel for my sister, Alita St. James, who you may have remembered. You may have remembered back in 2004 was the oldest woman at that time to bring twins into the world, my nephew Gian and my niece Francesca. And she's going to be 70 tonight. She's an internationally acclaimed energy healer, a best-selling authoress, and a life coach. And we welcome her to the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for joining us, Alita.
Of course, Curtis. I wouldn't miss this for the world.
So you're 70 years old. In your wildest dreams, did you ever think that you would have twins who are now 13 years old?
No, never. No, not at 70, anyway. But that's how life rolled out, Kurt. You know, we were always so busy helping other people as we were growing up and traveling the world and learning about things that I figured I was like grandma. Grandma had mommy at 54 and, you know, the last of 13. So I figured I had all the time in the world. But now, you know, now I'm 70 and I'm like you. I have more energy now than I even had when I was 40. And you have to have that with teenagers. That's for sure.
Well, it seems that you broke through a lot of misnomers and a lot of misinformation when you became a single mother of twins on November 9th of 2004 at Mount Sinai Hospital. Received a lot of national and international attention. Have many women followed in your footsteps? Have they reached out to you? Have they actually gone on that journey to have children at the latter stage of their life?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now the ceiling's much higher. And women are having children in their 40s, some of them in their 50s. But a lot of them get in touch with me and they say that I've been the inspiration to say, watch me, yes I can, which was my motto when they said I couldn't do this. And that it's about winding up and not down and not having a ceiling for women. They don't do that for men. Men can have children in their 80s, you know. I don't know if there's anybody that went to 90, but, you know, that seems to be okay. So I actually work with women in my practice because I'm an energy healer and a life coach. It's called spiritual fertility, and it's about living a fertile life. So it goes beyond just helping women get pregnant, especially, I'd say, in the ages of 35 to 45. That, believe it or not, in this day and age, because of stress and environmental situations, women are having a hard time naturally getting pregnant. So I work with them, whether it's naturally or with in vitro, to help them realize their dreams of becoming a mother, because many times there's emotional blocks that they're not even aware of that we need to get through to help them create their dreams. And I've had tremendous success with many women that are wonderful mothers today. I mean, I wouldn't want anything, I wouldn't give up anything in the world if I didn't, you know, to have my children. They are wonderful. They are certainly challenging as teenagers. And it's also very challenging bringing children into the world now with all the technology. It's really different than the way we grew up, Kurt. Remember, you used to have your soldiers and your baseball cards, and you'd play for hours. Now everybody's on the phones, and they're texting, and they're in their rooms, and they have a whole different life going on than we did. So that's a pretty big transition.
All right, well, you had twins at the age of 57. You're now 70. The twins are 13. What about the energy, though, required to raise them? Because I've heard from many parents who've said, oh, it's hard enough to raise children when you're younger in life. It must be almost impossible to have that same energy level to keep up with the kids when you're older in life.
Well, you know what? I don't find that because I don't have that age discrimination in my head. I think age is just a number. And I also do energy healing so I can move. I don't get stuck in negative emotions. I'm able to process them through. I call it shift and glide and see the challenges are really opportunities for growth. And a lot of great things can come out of them rather than getting stuck in the loop of, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda, anger, fear, resentment. I really move that through and move into a higher, like, what's my opportunity in this? How can I turn this around? look at you, Curtis, you got shot. I was there. Remember when you woke up? I'll never forget that. We were in the hospital after an 8-hour operation, and there was Cardinal, who was that?
Cardinal O'Connor,
right, and Mayor Koch, and you woke up, and you said, and you looked at Koch and said, I must be in hell, and we all broke out laughing.
Yep.
Because you kept on going, so you didn't get, nothing ever stopped you, and I always know when I call you up, if ever I have a problem, you always give me the other side of it, like, you can get through that, no big deal, and so...
Now, what is it like, Alita? This is my sister who, at the age of 57, at that time was the oldest woman to have twins. Others have since had single births and twins in their 50s. The twins are now 13. But what was it like raising them on your own? Because the traditional family we think of as a man and a woman raising kids together, you had to do it solo.
Well, you know, Kurt, we were brought up. Daddy was a merchant seaman. Mommy brought us up for big, vast periods of time, 3 months at a time before we saw Daddy sometimes. I was used to being able to man the ship. And you know what? I have a big support group of my friends, my clients, people that come in and connect with the twins. And so it's a big extended family that I have. So, yes, it would be nice to have the right partner, and I'm not cutting that out as an option in my life. But it has to be the right person, because if it's not the right man, right partner, it's not a day at the beach.
Now, what recommendations would you give to any women out there who are listening, who may be put aside bringing children into the world, or at least trying to do that because they were involved in business ventures or work or other things that were priorities in your life? What are some of the first steps that they have to do if they are really serious about having children later in their life?
Well, I think, first of all, there has to be a very deep desire to have children. It can't be coming from there is a void in my life and I want to fill it in, or I want to relive a childhood that I didn't have in a positive way, because it's hard raising children. You have to really love them, and be willing to dedicate your life to that process. So that has to be number one. And I got to a point where I felt like, you know what, I did everything I wanted. I traveled the world. I had relationships. I had the glamour. I had all that kind of stuff. Now I was really ready to settle down and have children because I knew I could give them a lot at that particular point and I'd have no regrets. That's number one. Number two is feel like financially you're able to come to the table and be able to create a situation where they can have their education, they can have the right experiences in life, and that if you have support around that, then that's great. Then you can rise and thrive with the children. Also, I always believe in creating the best opportunities for kids and coming to the situation as, positive as possible so that you're with kids and you feel like, you know what, I've gone through a lot in my life. I've really looked at myself. I've worked on myself. So I'm not going to bring all my neuroses into, and project them on my children. Well, I feel like I have a lot to give to them, and they can thrive.
And that's that'll be on show tonight because my sister, Alita St. James, you are listening to, will be celebrating with us and so many of her friends and colleagues and clients her 70th birthday as the woman who at the age of 57 had twins, my nephew, Gian, and my niece, Francesca.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
One of my favorite topics in the Drive Home at 5 is about the geriatric espresso sipping psychotic killers of organized crime, the mobsters choking on their lobsters, and no one fits that profile better than Tommy Schatz Gioli, who for a while was the head of the Colombo crime family in the absence of Carmine the Snake Persico, who actually is a cellmate of Bernie Madoff down in Butler, North Carolina. You know, Madoff is his Maytag. But anyway, Tommy Schatz Gioli is going to go to hell. There's no doubt. There's a special place for him there. Because in his younger days, he was running through the streets of Dyker Heights. He had a sawed-off shotgun in his hand. There was a dispute over the monies that the Colombo crime family was dividing up over the porno classic Deep Throat. And he kicked in a door, and then he unloaded the shotgun. And there was a nun on the other side. Tommy Schatz Gioli. Killed a nun. There's a special place in hell for nun killers. But now he has the culions. He has the chutzpah to sue the federal government as he's doing major time because he was in the midst of playing ping pong, you know, in the rec room. And all of a sudden, Tommy Schatz Gioli took a dive. And he claimed, oh, I broke my kneecap. I have sciatica. I have all kinds of ailments. And he's now wanting to sue the federal government for millions and millions of dollars. This coming on the heels of saying that the federal government is serving all kinds of junk food in their prisons. You know, the honey buns that they all love. It's like currency in jail, right? He's claiming, oh, that led to me having diabetes, losing my teeth, my goiter problems. I have thyroid problems as a result. So he's trying to swindle. He's trying to shake down, extort from us, the sucker taxpayers, millions and millions of dollars, even though he took a shotgun to a nun years ago when he kicked in the door of a house in Dyker Heights and he let that shot go. And it took that nun right to heaven. And it should guarantee a trip of Tommy Schatz Gioli, straight to hell without an asbestos suit. Oofah, Tommy.